The Retirement Conversation focuses on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join Joe and Dennis and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who have created interesting second acts. You'll take away practical ideas and tips to create your own. At Retirement Wisdom, we as retirement coaches help people think through their transition into retirement, as well as those who are in the early part of retirement but are looking for more from this stage of their lives. To find out more about us and how we can help you, you can schedule a free, no-obligation consultation with us. Simply go to retirementwisdom.com. On the top left corner, click on Get a Free Consultation. We would welcome the opportunity to speak to you. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to today's Retirement Conversation with our guest, Laurette Pruden. Working at the intersection of business and people processes, Laurette Pruden, PhD, has helped hundreds of small business owners, startup entrepreneurs, sales professionals, and community leaders grow their businesses and manage that growth. Her clients say she directly impacts their bottom line in time, energy, and money. Many of those clients have left the corporate world to start and run businesses of their own. Laurette is a Princeton chemical engineer turned entrepreneur, formerly with Mobil, in business for herself since 2000. Laurette speaks, consults, and writes on the transition from working for others to building a successful business. With formerly corporate, she lays out the path for the erstwhile employee to become a successful business owner. Laurette lives, works, and when not inciting the formerly corporate, manages her local farmers market in central New Jersey. Laurette, welcome today, and thanks for joining us.
Laurette, we'd love to hear more about your corporate career in chemical engineering.
That's a question I get asked a lot. How did a nice chemical engineer like you wind up doing this sort of consulting work? And the answer really, after I thought about it a while, is that my career so far has had three arcs. I would be waving my hands if we were not on an audio production. Where the first one was my fascination with chemistry. It started in the sixth grade. And when my science teacher first got the concept over to me about atoms and electrons and molecules, and ever since then, I've been trying to figure out how those simple building blocks can make all of the amazing diversity we see in front of us. And so I majored in chemistry in college, and I went to work for Mobil in their research and development corporation right after college, where in the oil business, many people are engineers, particularly chemical engineers. And I had never even laid eyes on a chemical engineer before. I didn't know anything about what that was about, but I learned something. And I also learned, I have to be honest, that they value, that is, they pay more to the chemical engineers than they do to the chemists. So I was up for a new challenge, and I went back to graduate school on a fellowship from Mobil, which was a sweet deal, and I greatly appreciate it still, in chemical engineering. So the first one, the chemistry part, is about the what is actually happening. The engineering piece is about how do you make things really commercialize a process. And then I ran up against the, so who's going to do this for you question. That's the people side of things. And that's the third arc of my career that I'm still in. When Exxon bought Mobil in 2000, that what and how part came to a screeching halt. And I took stock of my skills and the things I really like to do. And one of the things was I wanted to have a business. It's hard to have a solo business as a chemical engineer. You need too much infrastructure. So I really took stock of what I had liked about the last 10 or 15 years of my career. And it was the people side of things. It was how to encourage and empower individuals and teams to do more than they thought they could really do. So I started a consulting practice. And it has morphed a few ways over the last 19 years, but that's good. And that's how I got here.
A lot of the people listening either have transitioned or are planning a transition. What was it like for you to transition to becoming formally corporate?
I would never underestimate how difficult that is. First of all, it's just usually a shock. Even if you kind of know it's coming, we did know it was coming for a year and a half, which was a pretty miserable year and a half, I have to say. But it's hard to imagine what it's really like to come out of an organization that's big and structured and where you have colleagues and a few adversaries, and then you're sitting there on your own. I think that the hardest thing for people in the transition, It's the lack of structure and the lack of companionship, camaraderie, if you will. It's a shock to people that they miss it and then that they have to go and create that for themselves. Everybody has this fantasy that you can make your own hours, you can work in your bunny slippers. That was a big thing. Bunny slipper boot camp was a thing when I first started my business. Your time is your own and you can do whatever you want to, which not if you're running a business of your own either. So people have to find some way to build some structure for themselves to get out of the house or out of the office if they're new. And entrepreneur land can be lonely if you let it. And so that's part of the surprise to people is how to not do that. One other thing was it's hard to know exactly what to do. If you're having to create everything for yourself, I can remember sitting at my desk after I got my business cards and my stationery and my phone number and my all that stuff, and I got my desk all set up. I can remember the feeling of going and sitting down and going, I don't know what to do first or so.
You mentioned the structure. You really have to provide it yourself as opposed to it being generally provided for you in some ways.
You do, and you can hire it. And that's one of the reasons I put a plug in for having a business coach here. That's one of the things a coach or being in a mastermind team or being in a structured networking group or, I mean, there's lots of ways to do that. But I think you really have to create some structure for yourself. It doesn't have to be somebody else's structure. That is the nice part. You still have that freedom to change it if you want to, right? You don't have to drive to work in the national statewide emergency where nobody else is on the highway except you. You know, you can do some things like that. But really, willy-nilly, I'll just do it when I get around to it. Maybe tomorrow, maybe next month. It's not going to get you too far if you're really serious about having a business.
So in your book, Formerly Corporate, you talk about how the skills and experience a person acquires over a corporate career can be leveraged in building an entrepreneurial business. What are the big opportunities and challenges that you see in people doing that?
Well, the opportunities are huge because assuming that you're not just a total ne'er-do-well and you've been working for a while, we have learned some things and built some skills and tried some stuff that doesn't work and created a system in a way for ourselves about things that work. The problem is that the things that work for, now I'm talking about a large corporation to or large organization, because all of this applies to government and large nonprofit work as well as corporate America. The things that worked there don't always work in the small business world. In fact, they sometimes are really counterproductive in the small business world. So there's a few things in the book, I call them formerly corporate outlooks, which may or may not be helpful. So one of them is the assumption that you started with, which is that your corporate experience is going to connect directly to your small business needs. And some of it will and some of it will not. Things that you might do as a large organization, you can't afford to do as a small organization. Some kinds of market research. There's an example in there about McDonald's doing market research versus the candy store doing market research, right? You may think you know about taking risks if you've had a few people, but I propose as a corporate employee, you never took the risks with your retirement funds, with your home equity, with your children's college education that you might be taking as an entrepreneur in your own business. It's still a different, it's a different game. And that leads me to another formerly corporate outlook that gets people in trouble, which is I know what it takes to win. And you might know what it takes to win the game that you used to be playing, but you're playing a different game. And one of the things the new business owner has to figure out is what game they are playing. Is it chess or is it checkers? It's the same board, but you need to know. Bigger risks if you're playing chess than if you're playing checkers, right? Is it cricket or is it baseball? What are the rules? Why is it different? It looks kind of similar, but it turns out it's not. So there's some learning, pretty steep learning curve to figure out what is the game that you're playing. My best advice for that is to talk to other people who've been through what you are trying to do. The small business world is awash, in a good sense of that, with people that are willing to help other people. I remember when I was on the petitioning end of, could we have a cup of coffee and you can tell me everything you know? After a while, I found myself on the other end of that conversation. And I'm very happy to do that and try to help people unless they come with the, I just want to pick your brain idea, which for those of us who are consultants, our brains are our stock in trade. And it's kind of rude to ask if you can pick somebody's brain for the price of a cup of coffee.
A dead giveaway is when they order the venti coffee as well.
Sometimes they don't even buy your coffee, right? You know, but so there's a balance there. I just make that point. The other thing is to think that formerly corporate outlook that can be a problem is when you think that a business challenge is just scale with size. Little business, little problems. You know, we know that's not right, right? Little kids, little problems. Big kids, big problems. It doesn't actually work in a linear fashion like that. I don't want to be too technical, mathematical, but sometimes the smaller the business is, the more non-intuitive the way things work. I don't want to go into the quantum business piece. We don't really have time here, but it's in the book a little bit. And it's just that McDonald's candy shop story is about that because things behave differently at smaller levels than they do big levels. It's like when you're a chemical engineer, one of the things you do is you will never go from the laboratory experiments to the big process in the, because it doesn't scale directly. It doesn't work if you know any of this terminology. So we have a pilot plant where we take it up somewhat in scale to test all the hypotheses and the processes and the temperatures and the pressures and all that kind of stuff. It never goes directly. And you always have to revisit what you're doing it that way. And I think the same thing is true for business. If you're really small, you're going to do things very differently from the way you would if you're really big. And in between, if you're trying to grow a really big business, then you have to test a lot of different things in order to make those transitions.
What's the different mindset that's needed to succeed as a business owner versus being successful as a corporate employee? You mentioned that figuring out the different game you're playing. Mm-hmm. What comments would you say about what you have on mindset?
I think one of the mindset challenges that people have in making this transition is around building strategic alliances and building referral networks. A lot of times you don't really have to, you should, but you don't have to bother with that so much when you're in a big organization. You should have strategic alliances. You should have a network. You should keep up with your professional colleagues who are in a different thing. And I think that's more and more true. People realize that now because people change jobs a lot more than they used to. But again, back to scale, it's on a different scale, I think, than what you need to do when you're a small business owner. So that's one thing. Another thing is there's a certain amount of having to let go of being the expert. If you were pretty good in your organizational box in your company, you may think you're an expert. You may be an expert there, but you're probably not an expert in another part of something that's really important for business. The example I always use for myself is I was pretty good at what I did, but I didn't know anything about sales and marketing. And you cannot have a business if you don't know something about sales and marketing. Including that that's the wrong way around for that phrase. It's marketing and then sales. I don't know how it got to be that way, but it is. And so that was a big piece of mindset change that had to be there. Another one is that you both need to be willing to learn what you don't know, but also to be able to let somebody who does know what they're doing do it for you. You don't have to hire people full time. You can do a lot of work by building those strategic alliances, connecting with people who do have a skill set that you don't have, that you don't need full time, that you don't need to hire, and they don't want to work for you full time anyway. So building those sorts of relationships are really, really important. You can scale a business pretty far up without ever hiring a full time employee if you go about it that way.
So in your work as a business coach and advisor, what are the big mistakes that you see people commonly make, and how could they be avoided?
One of the biggest ones is what I was just talking about, accepting that you don't have all the skill sets that you really need, and then figuring out how you're going to get that. Another one that people, I just had this conversation with a new client yesterday, that people do all the time, I don't know why, is they underprice their services. And the thinking is that, well, I'm new and nobody knows who I am. Who am I to go in and charge top dollar because nobody will buy it? So I'm going to go in under the radar and be low priced, and then I'll get a lot of business and then I can. No, It doesn't work that way. What you will do if you take that approach is you will establish yourself as a leader in the underpriced services category, and it will be very difficult to raise yourself up again. It's possible, but it's a lot harder. It's easier to price yourself fairly, and that you got to figure out what that is, and maybe a little on the I'm pretty good at this end of fairly, right? Because otherwise you won't be able to sustain your business. The people that sell loss leaders have something that they overprice at the other end of that. So if you've got a loss leader, you better have something coming along the way. I'm waving my hands around. So that's one problem that people have. I try to catch them early on that because it's really hard to recover from that.
So what kind of recommendations is someone who doesn't know how to price their business? How do you kind of help somebody, guide somebody along those lines?
Well, it's a little bit easier now because of the internet. And so you can, most people don't put their prices on their website, but if it's a retail anything, you can find some priced stuff. But you can also find some pricing for services. So coaching service prices are pretty easy to find because people are always trying to sell online, and then you can see what they have. So that's a little trick there to look for.
So easier to do research today. It's a lot easier.
It's a lot easier to do research today. I will say, though, that some things, the prices just pretty much throw a dart at the board and try to hit a big number because it depends partly on your target market, particularly in coaching and counseling services and things, because what appears to be the same service, it can be had for $49 or $497 or $4,997. That goes back to your own perception of what value you bring to the client and what perception the client can see about your value.
So what are the key obstacles you see at the next level once someone's made it through the gauntlet of the startup and they have some success? What's in their way in taking their business to the next level?
Doing more of the same thing that got you to level two is not necessarily going to get you to level four. It's not just the more, work harder, harder, hours, phone calls. If you're going to take your business to, what do we mean by another level? I'm talking about a business that has a bigger impact. I think that's something that's important to me. I want to have an impact on the people that I work with positively. And so goes back to that pricing question, like, well, how much is it worth to you if we do this? If I bring you five clients that pay you $100,000 a year, would you be willing to pay me $50,000? So you have to do something different. I mean, that's the thing. You can't just bang on it. Another thing is that people are afraid to do it. They're afraid to take themselves to the next level. They don't always want to admit to that. When they do, that's a good sign. If you're coaching them, that's a good sign if they admit that. And that can be all sorts of things. I often say to new clients, I'm not a therapist. I don't do therapy. I'm pretty clear about where the boundary is because I have some experience in that world. So if I think it's a therapeutic issue, I will say so. And I have some people I can refer them to, but we're not talking about that. But a lot of things are just, we stop ourselves in all kinds of ways. We stop ourselves because of lack of self-confidence or because one time we got rejected and we forgot about the 99 times we didn't get rejected. A lot of human nature catastrophizing things that are going on. So there's a joke that goes around about, what do you do for people with psychosis? We help them get out of their own way. But there's an element of truth to that, and it's a little different for everybody. But people stop themselves all the time, knowing exactly what they should do next. Back to that, I didn't know what to do next. I can still stop myself by knowing exactly what I should do next and not doing it, right? So having somebody to talk you through that or talk that through with you, having some peers like in a mastermind team or an accountability partner who will say, what? That can be really, really helpful. Back to that, entrepreneurial land can be lonely if you let it.
I would also imagine you were talking before about the new game you're playing in your book. It makes these analogies to the sports thing, which I really liked a lot. Identifying, observing, studying the rules, using the right equipment, mastering the rules, and practicing the skills. That doesn't stop, right? You have to keep doing that. That's a cycle, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think that's very important for people to know that it's just, this just keeps going.
You know, it's funny. It's funny to me that in the sports world, we totally accept that people have to keep practicing and have to keep polishing their skills and have to have a coach and have to have an accountability to what's going on. We totally get that. We know that your skills don't stay at the top unless you use them. But we don't think that applies to our business lives. I always say we because I have all the same problems that my clients have, all the same issues, and it helps me too to work through them all. So just because you are a great at PowerPoint, which is a 25 or 30 year old technology, doesn't mean you might not ought to take a look at Prezi, which is another presentation through it. I'm talking to myself here. But, you know, so you can go a long time on what you already know, but at some point you got to buff up a little bit.
Well said. Prezi is a great tool. If someone listening wants to get the short course that's covered in your book, how would you explain the Starburst business model?
Okay, so I love the Starburst business model, not only because I named it that, but because I discovered it. I didn't invent it. I discovered it in working through with another client. So here's the short version of that. We were talking about needing skills and skill sets in your business that you don't necessarily have or want to obtain. So there's a lot of people like that. And I'll use the example of my publisher who owns a business here locally. Can I plug her? Karen Hodges Miller of Open Door Publications was a freelance business writer when I first met her, probably 15 years ago. She had a dream of starting an independent book publishing book. She saw what was happening in that world, publishing house, and she really wanted to do that. She actually started that business in 2008. Remember what was happening in 2008 in the recession, and she's now going great guns with that. And so we are both co-authors and co-coaches and friends and lots of other things. But Karen always insisted that she did not want to run an organization. She didn't want employees. She didn't want any of that stuff. And it had become a conversation we had many times. And so one day I just leaped up in front of my flip chart and drew her organization. I drew her in a circle in the middle and I put arms out on it. So think of the starburst with rays going out on it. And on the end of every one of those rays, I put the people that were in her organization, her graphic designer, her website designer, her 15 different kinds of editors that professional writers and people have, copy editors, this editor, that index editors, blah, blah, blah. The people that everybody has, like your accountant, your attorney, your business coach, everybody should have one of those. All of those people were part of an organization that she ran, but none of them were full-time or should be full-time or wanted to be full-time. And it was sort of a revelatory moment for everybody that was in the room, like, oh. And one of the differences, or I would say the main difference in my mind between a Starburst relationship and a subcontracting relationship, because that came up a lot when we first started talking about this, is that a subcontractor doesn't care anything about your business except, are you going to hire them again, right? I mean, that's fine. I'm not putting a judgment on that, but you call the guy and he's supposed to come and paint and he comes and paints and he cleans up and he leaves and that's good. That's not what often happens in that example. And I have another set of clients who run a construction business, and they actually have these Starburst relationships with their subs, if you will. So they show up on time, and they clean up after themselves, and they do all that stuff. But they have other clients. The painter has other clients. The graphic designer has other clients. So the Starburst idea, the other one thing I'll say about it is, so that's one, Karen's business was one Starburst, right? I'm one end of that Starburst, and a marketing person is one of her Starburst rays, and we have a relationship. And so each one of the, if you think of the tips of that ray, right, has its own Starburst shooting out of it. And so in my mind, I see this great constellation of businesses that are working together, that are supporting each other. They're interdependent, but they're not dependent completely on each other. And to my great pride and delight, Ivan Meisner, who founded the Business Network International Group, says that's the 21st century business model in the gig economy, in the blurb he wrote for my book. So I was beyond thrilled about that. And we see it happen more and more. It's 2019 right now, and that's what's happening.
So to summarize, if someone listening has just become formally corporate, or as I like to say, joining the formally corporate community, or expects to be soon, what advice would you offer them if they're considering starting a business?
The first thing is to get help sooner rather than later. You do have to think through a lot of things for yourself, but you don't have to make it all up for yourself. So I always tell people to take the free training that you've already paid for, either with your taxes, right? So the Small Business Association, the Small Business Development Corporation Commission, is that what it is? SBDC. We have several in New Jersey. They're all over the country. They teach courses in the basic fundamentals of some business skills, and you should go do that. They can help you get set up legally, all that kind of stuff. Please go do that. If you bought a franchise, which is a good way to make the transition, have you taken all the training that your franchise offers? Not always. So go do that. And then try all of that stuff for a year or two. It usually takes that long for people to figure out that they're running into some obstacles that they didn't expect and they don't really know what to do. Then hire yourself a business coach. Get somebody to help you over those obstacles that you're now running into, and or become part of a mastermind team. And we could have another whole podcast about mastermind teams, but that's really a group of peers. They work best if they're facilitated. I facilitate those kind of teams, and I think they're huge value for the people that are in them. There would be people from different businesses, but sort of the same stage of business a little bit, who everybody's solved a different problem, but they all have the same ones. So that's a great way to get started. What I think are the three characteristics of successful conquering entrepreneurs. One is that you have to embrace ambiguity. The answers are just not in black and white to everything. And it's just not always clear what's going to happen. Experience is the best teacher in some of this stuff. And you just have to try it, whatever it is, and see what happens. I'm an experimental scientist, so that's in my nature to do that. But you won't know what's going to happen until you try something. And then you can figure out what to do next. Which takes me to the second point, which is accepting volatility in the business world, in the economic world, in the this last 2 months. In February 2019, the jobs market numbers were way down and everybody was panicking about the thing. Today, they were up again. And so never rely on one data point. Never rely on the government statistics until 3 months later than when they get revised. But that's just volatility. And so you want to pay attention to it. You have to accept that it's there, but don't jump too far and make really big changes about things that are going up and down. And then the third thing is to remember that business, one of the best things about business, and I didn't really know this when I went into it, is you get to make money out of thin air. Think about it. There was no Amazon. Well, he didn't make money for a long time either. But, you know, there was no coaching business 20 years ago. There really wasn't a coaching business. And so whether you're selling a hard thing or a service, you can create value for the person who bought what you're selling and for yourself. And then my last point is to be successful in business, you have to sell something. And it's hard for the formerly corporate to embrace the idea of sales. I could have said this earlier, but it's one of the things that's really the hardest for people. They think sales is bad used car sales, right? And it's a big personal hurdle to help people get over that feeling.
Loret, how can people find out more about you and your work?
My business name is Team Nimbus NJ. So I'll spell it TEAMNIMBUS. Like the rain clouds, NJ. And it's teamnimbusnj.com is the website. Team Nimbus NJ is my Facebook page where I'm lately doing a lot of really useful articles for small business owners. And my LinkedIn page is Loret Pruden. So those are the best ways to see what I'm up to. You can find my email there. My phone numbers are there. Please call me. I'm always happy to have that proverbial short cup of coffee and find out where your challenges are and how I can send you into a place that would help you.
Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today, because I know it's going to be helpful to many people.
Thank you so much for having me. This is really fun.
Thank you, Loret.
Dennis, what stood out to you as takeaways from our conversation with Lorette?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. I certainly appreciated her transition story. And basically, this is part of her journey. She went through this. And so this could sound like a lot of people who are perhaps in a corporate role before in their first career and starting to transition into more of an entrepreneurial career. So it sounds like also she pointed out that she found this to not be a very easy transition for her. She struggled early on organizing the business, staying busy with that, getting things in place, and then settling into the day-to-day structure became a challenge for her. Finding that rhythm versus what you were used to before can take time and can take a lot of effort and planning associated with it. She also mentioned the social aspect. She certainly had a strong network when she was working, and you have to redevelop that or maintain that when you go on your own. And that could be a challenge too. And it reminded me a lot of people who, similar to people entering the retirement phase, we hear this both structure and social networks, maintaining social networks can become a challenge for those, and especially if they haven't really thought about it before and they step into an area where they have all this free time and they haven't really thought about these two aspects. So structure and social aspects were two things that came out in her challenges in her transition. I liked the whole concept of it's a new game you're playing. And she mentioned these areas of the importance of identifying, observing, studying the rules, using the right equipment, mastering the rules and practicing skills, and some of these sports analogies I thought were kind of good. And it's also important you have to keep those things going. So I think that's good advice for people. Finally, on the mindset piece, mentioned a couple of the shifts that people have to make and letting go of being an expert and willing to learn what you don't know and accepting that you don't have all the skill sets. It can be challenges for people who are stepping into this. So taking stock of themselves and kind of taking that personal ego and being able to push it aside a little bit and be open to others is, I think, really important. Those are the key things that popped out at me. What about you, Joe?
Three things. The first one is really the value of her experience. I think she was very humble in describing her career, but just some things to note that she was really a pioneer in her field at that time. She probably weren't a ton of women in chemical engineering, particularly those running around with a PhD from the school across the street, this little school, Princeton University, that she had a fellowship to. So I think she has a wealth of experience that underlines her advice. And she talked about her career arc and three career arcs. And one way to think about this next phase for people post-corporate is the fourth arc, and how do you really define that and design that? Second one is transferable skills. You mentioned the different game, and she recommended thinking about what is it going to take to win, because some may transfer, some may not. So I came away thinking it's important for people to assess their skill set, know the areas where they have to adapt, identify specific areas where they need to be open to learning. And then she emphasized experimenting, you know, getting those designs and prototypes, experiments that you learn from. And then she also talked about some new skills or things that you need to become knowledgeable about or comfortable with. She mentioned ambiguity, dealing with that higher degree of it. She also mentioned risk, and I think that's an important one because she characterized it appropriately as real risk, different than when you're in the corporate world where you're dealing with other people's money. Now you're risking your own. Just a side note, we don't ever recommend that people do take money from retirement savings or things like that to start a new business. Some people have pointed that out to us. Some Twitter followers have made that important point to us. But I think really getting that new learning list ready and be open to this. And then third, last but not least, she told a compelling story about how it's not wise to go it alone. Really get involved with other people and ask for help early. She had great examples. She talked about mastermind groups. It can be very helpful in getting other perspective and leveraging other people's knowledge. She talked about really reaching out to people who have been through what you're about to go through or are going through. And then she also recommended talking to people who are doing today what you want to do. And I would echo her experiences in that. When I first got into executive coaching, I did a master's program and interviewed 20 of the pioneers in coaching. And they were very generous with their time. And I try to do the same when I'm asked today. But then she also really talked about the partnership piece, really getting comfortable in thinking of people you're working with as a virtual organization in the gig economy as partners, not just transactors or vendors you're using. And I think that's a very different mindset going forward. But great points, a lot of wealth of knowledge that you brought to the table, and very useful, practical advice.
Thanks for joining us today on The Retirement Conversation. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.